This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
And you have the rats. You know, you have to fight with the rats for the food.
That's Ibrima Chongan describing to Gambia's Truth Commission the conditions of the notorious Mile 2 prison operated under the Jammeh regime. Details coming up. Also, military officers seized Gabonese national radio, the state radio station today in Libreville, the capital. Discussion. And Sudan's interior minister says the country is calm and stable after more than 2 weeks of anti-government protests. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Gabon's capital, Libreville, is calm hours after an attempted coup today. A presidential advisor told my colleague, Peter Cloti, that the streets are open and government officials were told it was safe to go back to work. Five army officers took over state radio early today to declare they were taking control of the Central African state. But within hours, all five had been captured, and officials said President Ali Bongo's government was in control. Bongo is in Morocco recovering from an undisclosed illness that he suffered in October while he was attending a conference in Saudi Arabia. He has led the country since 2009 when he took over from his father Omar, who became president in 1967. The country is rich in oil and other resources, but critics say the Bongo family and their supporters have taken the profits without developing the economy to benefit its citizens. Our colleague Idris Fall from VOA's French to Africa service joins us to discuss what's happening in Gabon. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you, Yahes.
Give us a little background on the military officers and the attempted coup.
There were apparently six soldiers, a commando, which came early today, this Monday, at the radio television. And they announced that they are calling the population to revolt and they're going to create a committee to restore democracy. That was about it. And then I think the National Guard, Gendarmerie soldiers came out in mass, and two of them were killed. And apparently the chief of the group was arrested, and the government, in the mouth of the spokesman of the government, Guy Bertrand Mapangu, said that the situation is under control. For the time being, I think a lot of people were scared, stay in their homes, and others in the neighborhood, because the radio is in the main avenue of Libreville, where you have the National Assembly and all those ministries. And in the background there, you have poor neighborhood called Kokoche. Some people tried there to rally, but very quickly they were dispersed, about 50 people. But besides that, the situation is calm in Libreville now.
So, Idris, you're telling me these six officers went. Did they have the backing of the military behind them?
No, at all. No, at all. It is the main reason it did not last. You cannot organize a coup. You want to take over a country. You aren't having the backup of the high-ranking military or the army, and I think that is the main reason. The second thing is, if you are sure of what you're doing, you don't go to the radio and calling people to revolt, and nobody went out to revolt except a few people in some neighborhood. And that's it. And the soldiers come and took them back. Even we spoke with one of the journalists who was there working in the morning. According to him, some of the militaries, even when they found out that the coup has failed, they took the clothes of the journalists. It's how one of them did escape from the radio.
So give us a little background on the Bongo family and the state of Gabon in general.
Well, Gabon, I think you summarize it very well. Gabon had been ruled for more than 50 years by one single family, the family of Omar Bongo, who is father of Ali Bongo, who stayed in power I don't know how many years. And Gabon also, the politics of Gabon is very complicated because the main opponent today, called Jean Ping, who was claiming to be president in 2016, is or had been married with the sister of the actual president. They even have kids. So politics in Gabon is very, very...
It's all in the family.
Yes. even Jean Ping himself, he worked years for the former president. So the politics in Gabon, it is the family issues. And you see the lady who is the head of the Constitutional Court had kids with the former president. A novel opponent had kids with... That is Gabon. That is politics in Gabon. Yeah, and the people are very, very poor. You say that Gabon has oil, has manganese, has wood. But besides those fancy avenues, those nice ministries, when you go down maybe 100 meters away, people don't have running water, don't have electricity. That is Gabon.
Is there? Tell us a little. Is there a viable opposition in Gabon?
The what?
Opposition.
Well, they call themselves opposition. Since Gabon exists, you know, Jean Ping had been working for Mr. Omar Bongo for years. Now he presents himself as the main opponent to Omar Bongo. And you see, on another time, the former opponent are calling inside the government and they join in. And even the people who was working with Jean Ping accepted to go to the past legislative election because everybody needs something to put in his mouth.
And lastly, Idriss, one of the requests of these officers was like Ali Bongo, he was incapable of carrying out the responsibilities of the office because of his health. What is the situation of his health right now?
The guy went to a meeting in Saudi Arabia on October 24th and had an attack, cardiovascular attack, and he stayed there weeks. And then he went out of the hotel and now he's resting in Morocco. And even, I think, on New Year's Eve, he published a video addressing to the nation, but even in the video, you see that this guy did not have complete recovery. And but it's a health issue. The government did not manage it very well because they did not say clearly in the beginning what happened to him. They keep hiding, and it was his wife who was texting, telling that my husband going to come out of hospital. But in those kind of situations, it's better to be clear to what you say to people.
Yes,
and
yes.
Because they did not manage very well the communication issue, and it brought a lot of speculation.
Yes, yes.
Even some people was telling he was dead.
Yes, there was clearly an ambiguity about his health.
Idrissa
Fall from VOA's French to Africa service. Thank you for your input.
Thank you, yes.
The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has launched a $430 million campaign to help displaced people and refugees from the Central African Republic, CAR. Over a million CAR residents have been internally displaced or made refugees by years of intercommunal fighting. More than a quarter million of them are living in neighboring Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports on their plight from one such camp, Gado Bajeri, on Cameroon's eastern border.
Twenty-four-year-old Rosin Gazi Alzina sings a lullaby for her two-week-old baby to sleep. She sings that God, who helped them escape safely last month from the Central African Republic to Cameroon, will provide for them. Alzina delivered her baby boy 2 weeks after arriving at the Gado Bajeri refugee camp. She looks sick and tired. Alzina says she was raped by armed gangs after her husband was killed in intercommunal fighting. She says she was traumatized and is not thinking of returning to the Central African Republic. She would not be able to sleep because of the endless gunfire, suffering and killings, says Alzina. Although she is not sure of where to get her next meal, she says she prefers to stay where there is peace. A steady trickle of refugees like Arzina ensured the camp's population continues to grow. This month, it hit 27,000. Gado Bajeri Health Center nurse Bernice Mulangal says an average of 60 to 70 babies are born in the camp every month. She says less than a third of the women know who the fathers are because many were raped or worked as prostitutes. She says some of the women confide to them that while in Cameroon, they were raped on farms where they go to work. Others were raped by armed gangs in CAR before they escaped. Mulangal says wives lost their husbands to the war in CAR, but they lack the means to help the women medically and psychologically. The UNHCR says fighting in CAR has produced over 500,000 refugees and even more internally displaced. A lull in fighting in some areas allowed nearly 250,000 displaced to return home in 2018, but others like Alzina continue to flee unrest. More than half the population, nearly 3 million people, are dependent on aid. The UNHCR on Monday launched a $430 million plan for the Central African Republic from its capital, Bangui. Humanitarian coordinator Najat Rushdie says the CAR is in a very desperate situation.
I would like just to mention the tragic situation in Central African Republic. In 1 year time, we had an increase of 70% of Central African who are displaced.
CAR has been beset with conflict since the Seleka, a coalition of Muslim rebels, forced President François Bozize from office in 2013. The country has since been plagued by communal violence, mainly between Christian and Muslim militants. Though the country held elections in February 2016, the government has been unable to stem the conflict. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Gado Bajeri, Eastern Cameroon.
Sudan's interior minister says the country is calm and stable after nearly 3 weeks of anti-government protests led to the arrests of more than 800 demonstrators. Some reports say more than 2,000 people have been rounded up. The protests started after the government tripled bread prices and developed into demands for President Omar al-Bashir to step aside. The government says 19 people have died, while rights groups Amnesty International puts the death toll at 37. Interior Minister Ahmed Bilal Osman said protests started peacefully before erupting into looting and violence that has destroyed 118 buildings and set 194 vehicles on fire. Professors say several faculty members at Khartoum University were arrested yesterday after trying to join the protests. Others were reportedly forced into the faculty clubhouse with security forces surrounding the building to keep anyone from coming out. Eight years after the first spark of the Arab Spring protests, Tunisians and Egyptians appear deeply displeased about the situations in their countries. A recent public opinion poll by Zogby Research Services showed that 69% of Tunisians and 55% of Egyptians believe that their countries are moving in the wrong direction. Only 21% of Tunisians and 20% of Egyptians said they are better off than they had been 5 years ago. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi asked James Zogby, president of the Arab American Institute, about the reasons behind the dissatisfaction.
What was troubling about the numbers was not just the moving in the wrong direction, but that the numbers themselves were moving in a negative direction. There was a time when 85% of Egyptians said it was moving in the right direction, that they were hopeful, and the same in Tunisia, and the numbers have moved downward. In Egypt, they went down, then they went up, in 2013 and then they've steadily moved downward. And now in Tunisia, they've been continuing to move downward. So that is a problem. The reasons why, from the poll, what we find is that there's a lack of confidence in institutions, a lack of confidence in the fact that the promises made have not been delivered upon. And I think in Egypt, we can point to a few other issues that I think people, some folks won't be willing to accept, but that is a dissatisfaction with the military and the behavior of the government. When we polled in 2013, people said they were dissatisfied with the Muslim Brotherhood, but they wanted dialogue, national reconciliation. They didn't want the military to take over. And after the military took over, there was an initial wave of support. But numbers have continued to go down, and the country right now is probably very decidedly divided on the question of whether the government is performing well. So there are many reasons, I think. We don't get into all of them. We don't talk about the dysfunctional political parties in Tunisia, but we find that, you know, in the confidence question, they don't have confidence in the parliament. They don't have confidence in many of the institutions, and I think that's the case in both countries. It's really quite concerning.
Judging from the poll findings, what are the most important issues that concern the public in both Egypt and Tunisia, and what should the two governments do about them?
Jobs, always an issue. In Tunisia, it's a big issue. Egypt, the same. But corruption is an issue. Corruption is the number one issue in Egypt that people are concerned about. And they have been concerned about that from the beginning. They were concerned about that in 2011. There's also a concern with government and political reform. People want their rights protected. They want jobs. They want government to deliver. And they want to feel safe and secure and have their rights protected. And those are issues in every society, and there are issues in both these. With the additional one, I think that corruption in Egypt was a major one.
But how do you explain the lack of interest in democracy promotion in Egypt?
People want their rights protected. They want jobs. They want government to be responsive. Other issues become abstraction. They want to know that they're going to be better off tomorrow than they are today and that their children won't have a future. If the educational system isn't producing people that can find jobs, if young people are going without work, if they're finding that the wealth gap becomes greater between the rich and those who are very poor, if people can't make ends meet, then they're going to be unhappy. If you say to them, well, you can vote, and they say, for what? Because we're not getting anything, then it becomes a problem. So I think that issues like democracy promotion don't matter to people as much as government delivering services and opportunities and being responsive to people. They want their rights protected and they want reform that will provide them with opportunities to have their rights protected and to have a say in their lives.
So do you think the poll findings reflect a lost hope in the Arab Spring?
I think that that's what it's telling us right now. Tunisia was the model. Egypt followed next, and everything after that was a disaster. If you find that people in Tunisia and people in Egypt aren't satisfied and are finding a loss of confidence in what they once were hopeful in, then I think we have a concern here that we have to address. There are problems here. People have to address these problems and take them seriously.
That was James Zogby of the Arab American Institute speaking with my colleague Mohammed El-Shinawi. Nigerian troops raided one of the country's largest newspapers for allegedly undermining national security with a report that the military was preparing to launch an attack on Boko Haram militants. The troops arrested two journalists and hauled away computers and cell phones at Daily Trust offices in Maiduguri, a city that has been a focus of the resurgent Boko Haram and the capital Abuja. The army said the newspaper's report yesterday included classified information on plans to retake several towns that the militants recently captured. It said the information put troops at risk. There also was an editorial criticizing the military for its lack of progress fighting Boko Haram. The president's spokesman said troops had been ordered to leave the newspaper's office and that any disputes would be resolved through dialogue. Boko Haram has been increasingly active with the Nigerian presidential election looming next month.
2 years after President Yahya Jammeh left power in Gambia, the country is opening a truth commission that will look into abuses carried out during his more than two decades in power. The commission, known as the TCRR, or Truth, Reconciliation and Repatriation Commission, opened hearings today. Ricky Shreya has more from Dakar, Senegal.
The hearings in the capital, Banjul, will give alleged victims of Yahya Jammeh's regime an opportunity to voice their grievances publicly. Jammeh ruled Gambia from 1994 until January 2017. He is accused of killing journalists, torturing and killing political opponents, and sponsoring a campaign that allowed so-called witch doctors to abduct hundreds of people and force them to drink unknown substances. His paramilitary unit, the Junglers, was known to be particularly brutal. They summarily executed more than 50 Ghanaian, Nigerian, and other West African migrants in July 2005, according to Human Rights Watch. Ibrima Shongon, who was senior commander of the gendarmerie at the time of the 1994 coup when Jammeh came to power, was the first to testify. Shongon began by recounting the day of the coup and how he refused to take part.
Afterwards, Yahya Jammeh came and all us, they had their rifles. So I thought that any moment, probably, they will come for me.
Shortly after the coup, Jammeh's officers did come for him. Shongon was locked up in what would become Jammeh's notorious Mile 2 prison for 3 years. Shongon alleges he was tortured there by Jammeh's officers. They used physical violence and conditions at the prison were inhumane, he said.
And you have the rats. You know, you have to fight with the rats for the food, you know. In Mile 2, it's the only place I saw the rats. They even eat soap.
Shongon is one of many hundred who are expected to testify. The Amnesty International campaigner for West Africa, Marta Colomer, says the hearings are important steps to achieving justice in the small West African country.
This is a sign as well of the strong commitment of the government to break with the past systematic human rights violations that Gambia had suffered for 22 years.
After losing power, Jammeh fled to Equatorial Guinea. A video of Jammeh and Equatorial Guinea President Teodoro Obiang dancing together on New Year's Eve surfaced last week, raising doubts that Obiang would ever extradite Jammeh to Gambia to face justice. Colomer said despite the video, these hearings mark efforts to hold Jammeh accountable, whether in Gambia, Equatorial Guinea, or another country. Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Dakar.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic next week will be New Year resolutions. This will be Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Anger over rising prices, shortages of bread and fuel, and a cash crisis has incited demonstrations across Sudan and against President Omar al-Bashir. Is Sudan in the precipice of change? An in-depth discussion on the politics of Sudan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.